This morning, we're going to be looking at one of the most famous meals in history. And I'm not talking about my mum's roast dinner or any other meal that you might have had any time recently that was particularly good. And it's even been documented on canvas. It's Leonardo DiCaprio has... Leonardo da Vinci, rather, has obviously painted a very famous painting. And this morning, DiCaprio, yes. This morning, we're going to be looking at communion. And I've called this titled, this talk, A Meal with Friends. And we're going to be spending some time this morning looking at the Passover festival. We're going to be looking at the conversations between Jesus and his disciples. And finally, we're going to be looking at the practice itself. So kicking off with Passover. So we begin our journey this morning with a meal between friends. We catch up with the story at the end of Matthew's gospel. We are only got one more teaching week after this. So we're right at the end of our gospel readings at the moment. And Jesus has concluded his public teaching. He's concluded his public ministry as well as his teaching to the disciples, at least before his death and resurrection. And Jesus and his disciples are gathered to feast together. And we're going to read about that in Matthew 26. Now, on the first day of unleavened bread, the disciples came to Jesus saying, Where will you have us prepare for you to eat the Passover? He said, go into the city to a certain man and say to him, the teacher says, my time is at hand. I will keep the Passover at your house with my disciples. And the disciples did as Jesus had directed them, and they prepared the Passover. So what is Passover? It's one of the most important festivals in the Jewish calendar. It's an eight-day feast and festival celebration, remembering the freedom of their ancestors from slavery in Egypt. And we read about the origins of that in the book of Exodus, the very first Passover in Exodus 12. And that chapter in Exodus 12 goes into great detail about God's direction in choosing a lamb and preparing the lamb they would sacrifice, and the final act of spreading that lamb's blood upon their doorway, the doorposts of the Israelites' homes. And the blood of the lamb was there to identify the homes of God's chosen people, protecting those inside from the death that was to spread over Egypt. And the Lord would pass over those homes. And this is where we get the title for this festival, Passover. So it's a very strange festival to be celebrating, at least at first glance like that. So why are Jesus and his disciples gathering to celebrate this? Well, this truly was a moment to be remembered. It was the beginning of freedom for God's chosen people, as the Israelites headed off to the promised land after being set free from captivity in Egypt. So in preparing for this feast and to celebrate together, they would have prepared meticulously a table with full of symbology. They would have had a cedar plate, I need to get this right, a cedar plate filled with six different foods to help remind them of their ancestors' time in slavery, the destruction of the Jewish temple, and the promise of freedom. And there were different items to remind them of the bitterness of the bitter times and different things. It was really interesting reading back about it, or brought back kind of like GCSE RE lessons to me. And also at this table, there was the matzah, which is flatbread, which hasn't risen. And it reminds those that are feasting at the table the preparations that the Jewish families went through before they had to flee Egypt. Remember, the Lord told them to bake bread, but that to bake it really quickly. They couldn't have time to let it rise, that to bake it and take it in preparation to flee. And the final thing at the table are four small glasses of wine to remind them of the four times that God promised freedom to the Israelites. So Passover wasn't the only festival in the Jewish calendar. In fact, Leviticus 26 lists seven different feasts. You got Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, Pentecost, trumpets, Day of Atonement, and tabernacles. And so they're not afraid to have a celebration, to celebrate different things. I'm sure if we bring, I'm going to come to this later, I'm sure if you bring to mind what we celebrate, I'm sure there's lots of things that pop up in our minds that we celebrate. We might celebrate a birthday or a wedding or an anniversary of some sort. There's different things we celebrate, but actually when you look at the Jewish religion, they've got loads of different celebrations for celebrating different times, and those celebrations are pointing backwards towards God. They're pointing back towards God has done in their lives. We are reaching summer at the moment, and I think we'll recognise there's something really, really special about gathering with people together, particularly outside on a nice summer's evening. You might have a barbecue going, a glass of wine, and you sit around a table with friends and just enjoy good conversation with tummies full and the conversation's flowing. And there's just a certain amount of joy and peace in those moments when we're sat together having good food and good conversation. I want to be there right now. I don't know about you guys. My mouth's watering at the thought of that. And it's just something really special and unique about those times when you gather together, sat around a table. So this brings us back to our disciples, and Jesus sat around that Passover table. We have a bit of an idea now what they might be feeling when they sit together and enjoying food together, and why they're celebrating. We know the heart of why they were celebrating Passover, and the reason, because they are there to gather together to feast, but they're there to remember. And they feast for 8 days. It's a long festival. So how does this relate to what we now call communion? Let's read on a bit further in Matthew. While they were eating, Jesus took bread. And when he had given the thanks, he broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take this, this is my body." Then he took a cup. And when he'd given thanks, he said to them, "Drink it, all of you. This is my blood, the blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. I tell you, I will not drink from the fruit of the vine from now until that day when I drink it anew with you in my Father's kingdom." Jesus was spending time teaching them about that first communion. It's interesting what's written in Matthew's account here. In Luke's account, we have a bit more detail. Luke goes into a bit more detail with some further conversation, but also there's a very famous line which isn't included in Matthew's gospel. What do you think I'm referring to? Yes. "Do this in remembrance of me." So I've recently been listening to a podcast by John Mark Comer, and he goes into way more detail in this than I have time this morning. But he really calls our attention to this line and suggests that it's one of the most misunderstood of Jesus' teachings. The pronoun this, "Do this in remembrance of me." It doesn't just refer to the bread and the cup. It refers to the whole meal and more. It refers to life around the table and community with each other. He's saying, "Do this around the table. Do this together." It refers to more than just the symbology of the bread and the wine. And it's doing this with Jesus himself at the table. I think that's the important part in there. Jesus isn't just saying, "Take a sip of grape juice and a little pinch of bread in remembrance of me." He's saying, "Do life around the table with other followers of Jesus regularly. And don't forget, Jesus is sat at the head of that table." And the word remembrance do this in remembrance of me. It doesn't mean just bring a memory of me, but an actualized awareness of Jesus. And this is a tricky thing about communion. We get a bit layered with our timeline here, because we spend time sat thinking back to what Jesus did. We also spend time right there in the present about what it means to have Jesus in our life currently, and actually spending time saying sorry and welcome Jesus into your life afresh and anew, and also looking forward as well. You sat right in the middle of the time, you're looking forward to the day that Jesus promised that he would return. And it all gets just a bit topsy-turvy and a bit confusing in there sometimes. N.T. Wright sums this up in a book, The Meal Jesus Gave Us. I've got it on the screen in case I read it wrong. The hardest thing about the sacraments is they invite us to look at time in a different way. The term memorial does not merely mean bringing something to mind or remembering. It refers in some way to bringing the past, that divine action of the past, into the present, such that the present audience becomes part of that story and receives the benefit from such actualization. So do this in remembrance of me is to actualize, to make reality of what Jesus did and bring it into the present with us now. To look at this in a different way, a bit of an analogy. My little son Isaac, little toddler at the moment. Toddler is an important word. Hold on to that. He is careering around the house at the moment. He's really going for it. He loves going from like toddling around to careering around. And we have to remind Isaac continuously, remember where the banister is, remember where the table is, everything's at head height. You forget that as a toddler. You have to crouch down and go, table, shelf, banister rail. And if it's not that, we've got a dog bear who's running around the house after Isaac and is going, remember where things are. We're teaching Isaac, keep your hands out in front of you. And he does that. He runs around the corner at speed, just in case a bear, our dog, who's now head height with him, is in front of him. He's running around just in case he's there with his hands out in front. We've taught him, you know, he sees us do that. If bear's in the way, just give him a little nudge away. So he's doing that. He's copying us. But it's because we taught him, remember, do that, remember. So when we're saying to Isaac, you know, remember, remember, we aren't telling him just remember what we taught you. We're saying, take what we taught you and bring it into the present with you so that you can apply it to now. Hope that brings it together a bit. So when Jesus is saying, do this, this being community together, and do this in remembrance of me, he's saying, do life together around a table with each other. And do this in remembrance of me. Let the past break into the present to then shape the trajectory of our life, to shape our future. It's making an application to our life. So we have in the 21st century six different names for this practice that Jesus taught us. And I'm sure we all have one that we've either grown up with or are more attached to. We tend to call it communion here, and we're going to start there, but there's lots of other different names. And actually, it's really important to spend some time looking at some of these different names, because there's so much we can learn from. Five of which of these names of the practice come from the Gospels or come from the Bible, and one is a bit more modern. Not really modern. It comes later. So we're going to look through these now. I'll rattle through as quickly as I can. Firstly, communion. This comes from the Greek word koinonia, which translates to fellowship. It translates to fellowship or partnership or commune or community. And anytime you see that word fellowship or doing fellowship together or partnership or things like that or community in the Bible, that would have been, assuming it was written in Greek, that would have been written as koinonia in the Bible. It was talking about that time together. So in 1 Corinthians 10:16, it uses that original Greek, the cup which we blessed. is not the communion, the koinonia. Is it not the communion, the koinonia, the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion, the koinonia, the body of Christ? So this practice that we do is with Jesus, but it's also together. It's the community is not just a me and Jesus. Communion is me, Jesus, and fellowship, everyone. Next, breaking of bread. This isn't necessarily a common phrase that we use anymore, but it's certainly one of Luke's, the gospel writer Luke, it's one of his favorites. And he wrote it, he writes about it lots all the way through the gospel of Luke and all the way through Acts as well. So Acts 2:42, they devoted themselves to the apostles, teaching and fellowship, there's that koinonia word again, and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And in Acts 20, verse 7, we read, on the first day of the week, and in their culture, that would have been a Sunday, on the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. So let's not also get confused. Luke's writing about communion, or was he writing about a meal together? Well, at that time, when they were writing, there was zero difference. That was the same thing. They were meeting to spend time fellowshipping with each other, having food together. But amongst that time, they were also doing the practice of breaking bread and spending time remembering and some of the practicalities. And with the breaking of bread, they didn't use knives to cut the loaf. That wasn't the practice back then. They wouldn't have had a nice bread knife from IKEA. They would have literally grabbed the bread from the table, torn their chunk off, and then passed that rest of the loaf on to their neighbor who went and followed suit. And they were literally breaking bread for their food to eat. And as they were doing it, they were going, Jesus taught us this. Oh, Jesus, yeah, and he did this. And it would have sparked conversations and lots of different things. We won't go into that bit. And I was also going to talk a bit more about the bread and the wine. We don't have time to do that this morning. But one thing that I'd love to say on that is there's a song we might have a chance to do later, Taste and See That the Lord is Good. We're invited to taste and see that the Lord is good. And that is, we can see, we've been talking about the goodness of God in our lives in this church this morning. And we'll also get a chance when we do communion later to taste that as well, to taste the goodness of God and what he's doing. So quickly moving on to the next one, the Eucharist. This is also from the Greek language, from Eucharisto, which simply means the thanksgiving. We find this word in all four Gospels, giving thanks and breaking bread. The name has stuck around, and it's one of the most popular names for this practice. And, you know, worldwide, we're talking about here, not just in the UK. And just a suggestion, how about we call communion Thanksgiving meal? I mean, don't get confused between us and our American friends with their Thanksgiving, but it's a choice to be thankful. And I think that needs to be front and center as we gather. The next word, or the next name for it, the agape feast. This is another Greek word I'm sure you'd be familiar with, agape, meaning love. And this is the name that is used in the book of Jude. This is the name that's used in the book of Jude. And it was quite common practice to use the agape feast, the love feast. And when I was reading about this, we're reminded it's not just a snack. This is a feast. They came to feast. It's a celebration. It's a banqueting table laid out. And we're invited to that table to dine and spend time with Jesus, with our other fellow members of the church, our fellow brothers and sisters. And it's not just a snack. It's meant to be a meal. So how on earth did we get from a community back in Acts and leading on through who gathered to feast together, eat together, do life together, to a quiet occasion? I wrote somber there. That's probably a bit harsh. To a quiet occasion, an introspective occasion that we now do a little drink of grape juice and a pinch of bread. Well, this happened. I don't have a huge amount of time to go into it, but this changed a few hundred years later into the sacrament in the Middle Ages. It became introspective and a quiet occasion. And there was a lot of politics involved. There was a lot of the practicalities they were trying to defeat. And there was some of them for good reasons. And some of it's down to pastoral care. But ultimately, there was laws that were put in place to ban the practice of the love feasts inside the church, but not only that, but inside people's houses. And I find that just really sad. And it seems like it's been that same trajectory ever since, really. It does need to be mentioned that there is definitely a time and a place and a necessity for this introspective reflection amongst this practice. It can't go amiss. Reflecting on the cost that Jesus paid on the cross and that we are to do work before we come to the table. So it's interesting. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 11, everyone ought to examine themselves before they eat of the bread and drink the cup. And when we read that, we bring to mind what we do in our practice. And typically, we might have communion set up a couple of tables, occasionally it's been out there. And typically, so we're going to take time to do communion, at which point we'll then line up. And you might have a bit of quiet prayer or thought as you're approaching the table. And I'm not saying that's not right, but I'm saying that in Paul's writing, when Paul was describing a meal together, the way they were gathering on a Sunday, where the Corinthians were coming together to do life together, to share a meal together, Paul is saying, before you show up at that gathering, spend some time examining yourself. Spend some time assessing yourself. Is there anything that is out of sync with Jesus? Is there anyone I might need to forgive? Is there anyone that needs that I need to apologize to? What do I need to apologize to my Father for? And spending that time before you exit the house, spending time introspectively making amends and doing the hard work before you come to the table to then break bread together. There's an American author, Philip Yancey, and he writes that this table is different. It isn't where sinners find Christ, but it's where sons and daughters celebrate being found. And I think that brings us quite nicely and neatly into our fifth title, the Lord's Supper. It's a covenant meal. It's an act to commemorate and commit our time commemorate the cross, but also commit our time to take up our cross again. To follow Jesus and leave behind a place where we don't trust Jesus and step into a time where we commit ourselves, recommit our vows and step forward in faith. And the final title is Mass. And this is the one that came a few centuries later. And the word Mass comes from the liturgy spoken at the end of the sacrament, ita missa est. And the Latin translates to, go, you are sent out. So that ita missa est, that middle word missa, is the root word for mission. And later that phrase got shortened down to Mass. And that's where we get the word Mass, which has been taken to our present day. But it's a call. It's a missa est. It's a call. Go, you are sent out. It's recognizing what Jesus asked us to do, to go and be sent out. It was used at the end, and there's something really lovely about that. I think we should finish every communion with Itamita Est. Go, you're sent out. You spent time breaking bread. You've spent time being introspective, and saying sorry and fixing yourself. You then spent time in celebration and remembrance with other disciples. And then you were sent out into the world to do as Christ did. So what do we do then? Well, the entirety of this morning, we've been really talking about the importance of community here. We might not be able to do it like this every Sunday, like the disciples did. It'd be beautiful if we could, but we might not be able to do that. But actually, you know where it could happen. It can happen in your own homes. It can happen in your small groups. It can happen intentionally when you're gathering with other members of our church family. But we're going to spend some time in communion now, actually.